Here we go. Here we go. Yo, what's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of Tariq Radio. We're live. It's the end of the week and we're live. I'm doing the broadcast live right here in Los Angeles, ready to make it pop off. Let everybody know that we're on live right now, family, because we got a lot to chop up today. So you do not want to miss today's broadcast. What we're going to do, family, we're going to take a real quick commercial break. And I don't want y'all to move a muscle because we'll be right back right here to Tariq Radio.
Yo, you still ain't getting women? Really? Come on, son. You need to go to badboymembership.com and step up your game. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Locario, the bad boy of the dating game. And I'm telling you that if you really want to attract beautiful women, you need to go to badboymembership.com. This is where you get 45 through 90 minute step-by-step dating advice tutorials every month. Just sign up, follow the advice, and you'll get the woman you want. Go to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
What's up, family? Are you down for Black Empowerment? Because Black Empowerment is more than just a slogan. It's truly becoming a lifestyle. On Code Clothing is the brand that's unapologetically black and fly. Make no mistake, this gear is exclusive and not for everyone. You got to be grassroots aligned and coded up to truly appreciate this lifestyle brand. Check them out now at oncodeclothing.com. Sign up now and save 10% on everything in stock and follow them on social media at oncodeclothing. Are you looking for 100% natural beard product that cleans the skin under your beard and it stimulates growth? Then check out Beard Tree Oil and Herbs, LLC. They promote healthy beards over everything. They offer a full line of products, including beard and face wash, balm oil, mist, and detox. So treat yourself to the Beard Tree 3 package, which includes the wash, balm, oil for just $25. For best results, check out the Beard Tree 5 that includes all five products for just $50. So check this out all at beardtreeoilandherbs.com. That's beardtreeoilandherbs.com, or follow them on Facebook and Instagram at Beard Tree Oils and Herbs. Check out this brand new movie out right now called Memphis Magic. Now, Memphis Magic takes a look at the DNA of Memphis through the lens of a 30-year-old Memphis-born street dance called Jookin'. This dance style derived from the Memphis hip-hop scene about 30 years ago, so you don't want to miss this movie. This movie is directed by Eddie Bailey, and you can watch it now at memphismagic.com. And magic is spelled M-A-J-I-C. That's memphismagic.com. Yo, if you have less than perfect credit, you need to holler at my dude, Paul Levy. He can help you get your credit game in order, and he can help you see results as quickly as 45 to 90 days. He can help you out with items such as late payments, bankruptcy, medical bills, student loans, collections, and identity theft. Holler at my man, Paul Levy, at 203-820-3880. 73. Send him a text message. Let him know you heard him right here on Tariq Radio. That's again Paul Levy at 203-820-3873. Would you like to make six figures or more providing court-mandated classes like anger management, DUI, or shoplifting prevention? If so, go to courtmandatedtraining.com and sign up for the free webinar that will help you get started, even if you have no experience. So if you want to get that bag, if you want to get some money and do it the right way, go to courtmandatedtraining.com to learn more. Again, that's courtmandatedtraining.com. What's up, family? If you are a professional or elite waiver or beginning waiver, or you want to step your wave game up to the next level, then be sure to check out Ocean View Brand hair products found at oceanview.website. Ocean View Brand is the home of the Ocean View Deep Wave Pomade, which is ranked top 10 on Google's best pomade searches and reviews. So you need to step that wave game up right now. They have do-rags in different colors. They have wave kits. They have everything you need to get your wave game on point. Also, follow Ocean View Brand on Instagram and go to oceanview.website to get all their wave-related content and products right now. Yo, cupcake season is right around the corner, family, and you need to get your fragrance game all up in order. So you need to check out ashkicking.com. That's a black-owned business that sells all-natural health and beauty products, and it also has fragrance products. You can get beauty products such as body butter, hair moisturizer, face moisturizer, unique incense burners, incense sticks, scented candles, and so much more. So again, you need to check out ashkicking, that's K-I-C-K-I-N, .com.
The year is 2079. The futuristic nation of New Albion has been created to maintain a new racial apartheid system. There is a planned genocide that is going to target the nation's black population. A small group of black revolutionaries band together to launch guerrilla warfare attacks against their oppressors. Do they fail? Or do they succeed? Find out the answer by reading the book, Avoid the Machines. The new novel by author Scotty Vasco. Avoid the Machines. Now available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
You are now tuning into the legendary Tariq Nasheed.
I gave him the blood on that bridge in Selma.
On Tariq Radio.
Yo, we're back. What's going on, family? Welcome to Tariq Radio. Glad to have y'all tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. I know I was supposed to do the show a couple of days ago. A lot of stuff going on this week. You know, they had the funeral for our brother Nipsey Hussle yesterday, so we were doing that all day. And I'm going to get into that in a minute. I want to remind people, we got some new Ogun t-shirts and Ogun sweaters at TariqElite.com. We got that new Ogun wear, and we got the Ogun shirts in different colors. So if you want to get that spirit of Ogun on your body, go to TariqElite.com to get the Ogun sweaters and the Ogun t-shirts in different colors, ladies and gentlemen. And also, thank everybody. I'd like to thank you. We're at the halfway mark for the movie Buck Breaking. We're at 30K right now. We got 14 more days to go, so we're at the halfway mark as far as the funding and the days. So we got 14 days left for everybody to get involved with that film. I encourage everybody to go to buckbreakingmovie.com, or if you're watching live right here on YouTube, there is a link right in the profile section below where it says get involved with the new Buck Breaking documentary. Just click that link for Kickstarter, or you can just go to Kickstarter and type in Buck Breaking Movie. We talk about a lot of heavy stuff in this film, man. This is going to be a heavy one. I just saw an article today where they were talking about how they got like this cuddle program that they're promoting in different colleges. And I put that on my Instagram, and they got a black dude doing it. Anytime they want to push an agenda to challenge black male heterosexuality, they always get these white feminist groups are the ones backing this, and they make black people the poster people for toxic masculinity. That's an agenda, and that's something that we should not be ashamed of not co-signing. We don't have to co-sign that. We can question why they are pushing that agenda towards black society so heavy, because there's so many other issues that plague black society, but they choose to push something where our masculinity needs to be challenged and neutralized, because that's what it really boils down to. When they start running these stories, and we got to understand how dangerous this stuff is, because when they keep telling you over and over again, and they get their Sambo minions to co-sign about toxic masculinity, how toxic black masculinity is, that gives them the green light to justify harming black people. Black men in particular. I just saw a video the other day. Well, not the other day. I think I saw it earlier today, where there was a little sixth grade little boy. Some school officer came and just body slammed this little boy. Little black kid in the sixth grade. down there in Florida, and the police there said it was justified. I don't know how, but the kid did something beforehand, so I don't know what would justify body slamming a sixth grader. But this race soldier, this cop, body slammed this kid. I mean, like a grown-ass man. He did nothing wrong. He's not going to, the police is not going to get reprimanded, nothing. So we got to understand how dangerous that is. Any type of, if a boy in school, and I want y'all to understand this, if he's not switching around or sashaying, they look at him as toxic. I want you to notice that. Black kids who are sashaying and switching around, notice they get propped up. The dominant society props that up, but black boys who shows any type of masculinity, well, that's toxic. He needs to be neutralized. Like Dwayne Wade's son. Dwayne Wade has an 11-year-old son, and his son is gay. And they got this kid in like this, I want to say a gay pride parade or something, but they got this little boy switching all around. He was at some kind of modeling event. That's 11-year-old boy. And I'm not knocking his lifestyle, but the fact that this boy is so sexualized, that's disturbing. And they had him, he was walking down a runway, he was just switching, this damn near twerking down the runway. Now, I have a daughter. If my daughter was 11 years old, I would have a problem with that. Well, she was 11, and I didn't let her carry on like that. But they got this kid switching around and sashaying around, and he's the poster child for LGBT sexuality. That's disturbing. That's very disturbing that a child is sexualized like that. But again, notice if you're a black person and you engage in any form of LGBT behavior, notice nothing is wrong with that ever. They never find a way, and I'm talking about the dominant society, they never really punish them for any type of behavior they engage in that's sexual. Notice you never see any black men who are gay get caught up in Hollywood sex scandals. Have you noticed that? You don't see no black men in Hollywood with all this Me Too garbage. The only people who get caught up are the straight black men. But you never see any scandals with gay black men. You never see that. Now, white dudes, yeah, like Kevin Spacey and all that, but they don't do that to black dudes. Think about that. Why are they giving brothers a pass? Because I know there's cats in this industry who do a whole bunch of little freaky stuff behind closed doors with other dudes and kids. There's black dudes who into all types of stuff, but it never gets punished. They want you to keep that up. They don't want to start punishing that because they don't want to discourage anybody. So the message is, if you cross over to this side, get rid of that toxic masculinity. Somebody said Toure, right? But no, Toure, they got at him for getting at a white woman. You understand? Because I think Toure, his sexuality is definitely in question. It's definitely questionable. But notice Toure didn't get into no trouble until he spit at a white woman. You understand? Terry Crews didn't get into trouble until he started going a little bit too deep talking about the man and woman role. They were like, look, Terry, you're getting ahead of yourself. You're talking too much now. We just wanted you to attack black men. Now, Terry is trying to get into other stuff, and they're like, no. We're going to have to reel you back a little bit. But notice, man, they don't really get at cats negatively for engaging in LGBT behavior. Rappers too. When rappers wear dresses and all this stuff, they don't get at them crazy. You dig? Don't miss that. Because the thing is, and as we talked about, that whole Me Too stuff and Time's Up and that whole Michael Jackson thing, and you see with the Michael Jackson thing, a lot of that is backfiring. All the lies have come out. Oprah's trying to distance herself from that now because Oprah knows she messed up her base with that. Black people, that's Oprah's base. So black people are looking at her like the plantation mammy she's been acting like for a long time. And now so many lies about this Michael Jackson thing are coming out because these dudes, they had so many dates wrong, locations wrong, and people keep pointing out all the lies and the improbability of all of the things that they've been saying. So now Oprah's backpedaling, the producers are backpedaling, HBO is backpedaling a little bit. And remember, this whole thing, this Leaving Neverland garbage, that started at Sundance. That started at Sundance. Now, who was Sundance founded by? Yeah, the director's backing up. He's backpedaling. But remember, this thing premiered at Sundance. It was the rave in Sundance. Now, who was Sundance founded by? There were two main people who founded the Sundance Film Festival. Yeah, from what I understand, I think HBO is pulling it. They're not showing it no more because of all the lies that's been pointed out. I said Robert Redford, okay. Robert Redford, he was one of them. There was another guy who was the co-founder of Sundance. His name was Sterling Van Wagenen. How do I pronounce this? W-A-G-E-N-E-N. Wagenen. I think that's how you pronounce it, but it's spelled W-A-G-E-N-E-N. Wagenen. I'll just pronounce it like that. Sterling Van Wagenen. He was one of the co-founders of Sundance. Now, Google him real quick. Yesterday, Sterling Van Wagenen, the co-founder of Sundance, the film festival that put out that or really promoted that Leaving Neverland documentary, his ass just got charged with sexual abuse of a child. Google that. This just happened yesterday. You see what we're talking about? These guys put up these smoke screens and put up all these damn lies about black folks to cover up their own tracks. His ass just got charged with messing with a damn child. Google it right now. This is why we got to be on top of our game. Where you at now, Oprah? Where you at, Harvey? Remember, they do things to us to cover up their tracks. And black people, we cannot keep being stupid by co-signing these people when they are throwing us under the bus to cover their tracks. You ain't doing nothing when all these Negroes, these bought and paid for minions get around them. Well, R. Kelly is horrible. Okay. I'm not going to stand next to Harvey Weinstein's people and throw dirt on no damn R. Kelly. Well, I'm standing in a pile of dirt. A pile of dirt is standing right next to me if I'm standing next to a Harvey Weinstein or any of his people or all those people Oprah's connected to. I'm not going to stand with them and throw dirt on another black person when there's so much dirt on them. You understand? So we got to stop going for the okey-doke and falling for the banana in the tailpipe. We got to cut that out. And we gotta stop being afraid to call out systematic racism. And again, that's why the movie Buck Breaking is so important. We gotta start pointing this stuff out. We gotta start breaking this stuff down and pointing it out, family. And we cannot let up. That's the thing. We do one thing and then we let up. No, we gotta keep this thing going. Just like the case with the Hart family, those white supremacist lesbians who kill those black children. That bothers me to this day. And what's interesting is how the media is so sympathetic towards them. The white women who killed those children, the media, they're talking about, well, the women were, they were under a lot of pressure. One of them, she's been known to have gotten to drinking. They were being stressed out. I mean, they're so sympathetic towards these demonic women who killed those babies. That really bothers me more than anything. And the reason those two demonic bastards, women, they were stressed out is because social services were about to start investigating them even more. They've been investigated on and off for years, but now those poor children were running away begging neighbors for food, and these white supremacist neighbors not saying nothing or taking forever to say something because they all stay on code. So it took them forever to say something that, hey, these kids over here being abused and they're being racially terrorized. So there was about to be an investigation with Child Protective Services. So then those women, they bounce before Child Protective Services can come through. So they knew that the kids were finally about to be taken from them. And understand, I want black folks to understand this. These white people, when they adopt these black kids, do y'all know how much money these folks get? This ain't some old feel good, oh, I just love the black kids, I gotta help them. These white people get money for taking care of these adopted kids. That's a big time money making racket. And I use the right word, racket. Racket, racket, racket. It's a racket. They make money off that. Do you know the Hart family, those children, the real family was trying to get custody of them. They took custody away from them because the mom was on drugs, but the kids were staying with other family members. So one day, I think the mom came to visit, and they used that as an excuse to take the kids away from their family. So the black family was trying to get those kids. It takes a lot. Let's be real. For black kids to be taken away and put into foster care and all that, it really takes a lot. Black folks will take care of our family members. So usually there's something else to it. But understand, they get a lot of money for taking care of these kids. These white folks get all types of cheddar. So they'll get that little money, that little adoption money, that foster care money to take care of the kids, and then have them locked up in a basement somewhere, and the white people are tricking off all the money. So we better understand the game. Understand that a lot of these people don't do stuff out the kindness of their heart. Understand, the white supremacists, they've been demonic for the last umpteen thousand years. Nothing has changed with them. They get big money for that. Understand that. Yeah, they get all types of tax credits. Yeah, so those women, their little money was about to dry up. So they were done. Those white women, their money was about to, they weren't about to have no more money. Most likely they were going to get charged because those kids were going to probably spill the beans on them. So these white women, they were going to probably go to jail. So they said, okay, we're going to end it all and we're going to take them with us. So we got to understand the game out here. We got to understand. See, we got a lot of black folks out here who don't want to believe how devious and conspiratorial these white supremacists can be. Just like with the Nipsey case. When we look at all the inconsistencies with the Nipsey case, there's so many Sambos and buck dancers out here who loves white daddy and white mommy so much. Just the mere mention of pointing out any of their lies just bothers a Sambo. Sambos are just bothered by anybody pointing out the deception and the conspiracies of white mommy and white daddy. How dare you speak ill of white mommy and white daddy? Now, with the Nipsey case, before I get into that a little bit, again, yesterday they had the final resting ceremony for Nipsey at the Staples Center. It was beautiful. Oh, man, it was beautiful. We were there. Oh, it was a gangster party. That was the most classiest hood funeral I've ever been to. And that's what it was. It was a hood funeral. You had gangsters from all over the city downtown yesterday, and it was all love. You had Pyrus, Crips, Grape Street. You had people from everywhere. I mean, with the bandanas on, the rags, the flags, trued up, flamed up. They were there, heavy. and it was all love. The community came through. The Staples Center was packed. I think every seat was taken, and it was packed. Beautiful ceremony. Beautiful, beautiful ceremony, man. And the procession was a good thing, too. Now, the police, they've been in law enforcement and city officials. They've been pretending to be all sympathetic towards Nipsey. Oh, we're going to have a celebration for Nipsey and the Gil Garcetti and all the people in politics and the fake police departments. They're trying to send their little weak condolences. They couldn't wait to after this thing was over to start throwing dirt. They've been just biting their lip to get back to the mudslinging. Because let me tell you something. They don't like the fact that all of these black folks out here are on code. And all these black folks out here got unified. See, that was another thing. I don't think they expected that all of the neighborhoods and everybody are going to be standing together. They didn't expect that. Everybody's standing together real strong right now. There's a lot of love between all the neighborhoods right now. So they don't like that. And even during the funeral, Black Sam, Nipsey's brother, he said something real interesting, and I'm glad a lot of folks caught it. People were speaking their piece, talking about the memory of Nip, and Sam said something to the effect. He said when they got their business going in the shopping area down there on Slauson and Crenshaw, you know, they were renting the space from a particular landlord there. And Sam said, and he said this at the funeral, and a lot of y'all probably caught that on BET. He said that the owner liked them because they brought a lot of business. They brought business. They paid their rent on time, so they were thorough. But the owner told Nipsey and his brother, hey, man, I'm getting pressure from the city DA, from the district attorney, to get you guys out of here. So they were trying to do little stuff with the rent, and they were getting orders, and I'm talking about the owners, whoever they were, but they were getting the word from the DA, from the city, to sabotage them to get them up out of there. So what Nipsey and his brother did, they got the money and just bought the whole lot. So now people couldn't play with the rent. They couldn't play games with the lease, so they just bought the lot. So I thought that was very interesting. I thought that was a very interesting thing that Sam put out there. Because, again, that shows more precedent of what they were trying to do. Notice, they've been trying to, law enforcement and the city, they've been trying to sabotage that business. They were sending cops down there. They would ruffle those guys up all the time, harass them all the time for running a legit business. And remember, in this area, that area, and a lot of parts of LA, especially parts going close to the stadium that's being built, they're doing all types of stuff to run black businesses and black people out of that area. Because again, that's going to bring in a lot of traffic. When the stadium is built, that's going to bring in a lot of revenue. They don't want us getting that revenue. And this ain't nothing new. They've always done that. Anytime there's a money-making venture going on somewhere around a black area, the white supremacists in politics, they go out of their way to sabotage and displace black society. So you got this young brother, or these young brothers, buying up property. And remember, Nipsey, he's doing this in his late 20s. He's 33. He died at 33, but Nip's been doing this for a minute. So you got these young dudes out here buying up businesses, buying up lots, and telling other people in the neighborhood to buy up lots, and people are listening. That's a problem. That is a problem, family. They don't want that. They don't want people to not gang bang. Now you don't have an excuse to go in here and gaffle everybody up. Look how desperate they are to swing this gang-banging narrative. So this gives further credence to the whole conspiracy thing that the killing was orchestrated. This gives more credibility to that. Now understand this. During the procession, it was a great thing. The procession went through different parts of LA. They went through Watts. They went through Century Boulevard. Then they ended the procession over at the Marathon store on Crenshaw and Slauson. Peaceful, all love, beautiful thing. You know, I was down there. I was in the area. People showing me a hell of a lot of love. That's another thing, too. When I'm riding around and I'm posting stuff on social media, I see a lot of folks like, oh, Tariq, be careful. Be careful of what? See, we got to stop thinking like white supremacists think. I'm not afraid of black people, especially in an area that I lived in and people that I kicked it with. I'm never going to be afraid of black people. That's what the white supremacists want you to think. You're not in any danger like that. I mean, yeah, you got some dusty dudes here, there, whatever, but we're not in danger. Again, I've been around these cats. I know a lot of these OG cats. I know them. I'm cool with them. I get love like that. And again, it only takes one fool, but hell, even in the suburbs, nobody ever tried to kill me in Compton, Long Beach, South Central when I lived there. Nobody ever tried to get at me. Hell, when I moved to the suburbs, that's when I had guns pointed on me by race soldiers. Brothers from the hood ain't never run up in my house. Race soldiers have in the suburbs. You understand? So when our brother Nipsey said, having strong enemies is a blessing, who was he talking about? See, a lot of folks thought he was talking about the Eric Holder guy. Nah, he wasn't talking about Eric Holder. My man Nipsey's last tweet before he was executed was, having strong enemies is a blessing. That's a prophetic thing. That's game right there. In six words, that's a blessing. I mean, that's good game. Having strong enemies is a blessing. He was talking about them race soldiers. That's who he was talking about. He was talking about the race soldiers, the people trying to get him out the mix, the people trying to get him up out of that place. That's who he was talking about. Let's be very clear. He wasn't talking about that little old dusty minion who executed him, which we believe is at the hands of the white supremacists. He ain't no strong enemy. That's just some dusty dude with a gun. That's not a strong enemy. But who was orchestrating that dusty dude? See, we better understand what the strong enemies are. And the white supremacists and their race soldiers, they are strong enemies. And that's a blessing because that tests your resolve. That makes you rise up to solve one of the greatest problems that we need to solve, which is how to replace the system of white supremacy with a system of justice. And that's what our brother Nipsey was trying to do. Everybody at the funeral who spoke was talking about how knowledgeable he was and how woke he was and how intelligent he was and how much he loved to read and study and step his game up. See, my man was one of those people trying to figure out that problem. That is the problem that all of us should be solving. That's my life mission, to help solve that problem. That's what Dr. Welsing told us to do. That was her life's mission, to solve that problem. She died trying to solve that problem. See, we get on code and we all try to solve that problem. That's going to make us stronger people. But like I said, the procession was good, everything was great, and the white media put out a story saying that there was a drive-by shooting during the procession where three people were shot and one person was killed. Several white media outlets ran with this BS story that there was a drive-by shooting during the procession, during the Nipsey Hussle procession. And I saw a lot of other black folks run with it who are not from here. A lot of folks were running with it and they're not from here. And the way they worded the article was deliberately deceptive. And what happened, I think, was it the chief of police? One of those police captains, he tweeted that the shooting was on the Nipsey Hussle route. He tweeted that. He tweeted, yeah, there was a shooting, 3 people injured, 1 people dead on the Nipsey Hussle route. We need to stop this violence. This is one of the white police chiefs out here. He was deliberately being deceptive. Number one, that there was a random shooting in LA, but it wasn't on the route, and it didn't have anything to do with the Nipsey Hussle funeral. It had zero to do with it. Zero, zero, zero. Do y'all understand me? I'm telling you what I know. I was down there. Number one, that shooting happened hours after the procession was over. The procession ended 3 hours earlier, I think, on Crenshaw and Slauson. All right? So the procession was over. The procession was over. There was no shooting during the procession. That is a lie. The shooting was damn near at 7 o'clock at night. The shooting did not happen during the procession. And number two, it wasn't on the route either. And when people kept pointing out the lie, they kept pushing the goalpost of the lie. So the shooting did not happen on the route. The shooting happened way on the other side of town, over there in East Coast Crip Hood, on like one of, I think 103rd in Maine. So that's way across town. So what they did, it was some random shooting that happened later that day, and the media, in order to put dirt on a beautiful day of unity where everybody was on the same page, they deliberately put out a shooting or a lie about a shooting that did not happen during the procession that had nothing to do with anything. It was just a random shooting. We don't know who did it. Could have been some essays. Nobody knows who did it. Number one, it could not have happened on the procession, which the timeline is wrong. But also, during the procession, do you know how many cops were out there? Cops were everywhere. Cops were leading the procession. And there were helicopters all over the place during the procession. So it could not have happened during the procession because they would have gotten whoever did it. And also, people's energy wasn't there. So we got to watch lies like that. See, that's them trying to sully the spirit of the day where everybody's together. Black folks, we got to start questioning this stuff. And I saw a lot of folks running with the narrative. Oh, man, we got to do better, man. Oh, hell no, man, we got to do better. And then when people point out, hey, man, this shooting didn't have anything to do with the Nipsey Hussle funeral procession or nothing. It don't matter, man. We still be killing out there. We need to stop. Look, fool. Look, stupid. Dipwad. That's another. Stop being a self-inflicted coon. Y'all stop being a self-inflicted coon. You turning yourself into a coon. We cannot be responsible for every dumb move some random black person makes. We simply cannot be responsible for that. I want black folks to stop beating up on your damn self, because that's what you're talking like a damn white supremacist. What they do is blame us and punish us for the actions of a few. See, it's not supposed to go down like that. So we got this whole thing where we're going to self-punish the other black ourselves, really. We're going to self-punish ourselves for the actions of other people because the white supremacists do that. No, we got to get off that. We got to get off that, because that's, I've said this before, that's an impossible precedent to live up to. There is no way that all people who are black can stop committing crime. There's no crime-free group in America nowhere. There's not. There's not a crime-free group nowhere. In Hispanic society, they got Mexican gangs, Hispanic gangs who kill each other all the time. They sell drugs all the time. They rape all the time, molest children all the time. But Mexican people who don't do that, or Hispanic people who don't do that, they don't take responsibility for them. In the white community, same thing. You got alt-right school shooters, molesters, rapists, thieves, drug addicts all the time. And what white society does, they claim all those people are lone wolves. Even Asian in Asian society. You think they don't have crime in Asian society? They got whole Asian mafias, Chinese mafia, Filipino mafia. They do all types of stuff. They be running illegal massage parlors. They be selling opium and all this old stuff. They be in the game too. They don't take responsibility for every knucklehead move an Asian person makes. And I really wish we get off that. We got to do better. Look, there's 50,000 people around the city holding hands in unity. One dip wad does some kind of crime somewhere. All of a sudden, man, we got to do better. How much do we have to do? What do we have to do? What the hell do we have to do that's better as a group? Everybody's standing in unity. Again, we can't help all that. And another thing, since our brother Nip was laid to rest yesterday, today they announced that police arrested one of the other men who was shot along with Nipsey. There was another brother who was shot, who was Nipsey's friend. This is the guy Nipsey was going to the store to get clothes for. His friend just got out of jail. Nipsey went up to the store to get the brother some clothes. The brother was in jail for like 20 years, I think. Nipsey went up there to get him some clothes, and then this Eric Holder guy met Nipsey up there, and that's when the whole shooting happened. This is why I believe that it's my conjecture, and I don't have proof of this, but I'm just trying to piece things together so that it can make logical sense. I feel like Nipsey's phone was tapped. I feel there's a possibility, I'll say it like that, that there's a possibility that Nipsey's phone was tapped and he went up there and they knew he was going to be up there. So they sent the Eric guy. It's just a hell of a coincidence that this guy would go up there. Nipsey wasn't planning on going up there. That's why Nipsey didn't have no security. But the guy who got shot with Nipsey, they arrested him. They arrested this guy. And you know what the charge is? They arrested him for associating with a gang member. And the gang member is Nipsey. I want y'all to look that up. They arrested this guy, the brother who got shot. He's a victim. He's a shooting victim and a witness. So they arrested him for associating with a known gang member. And that's supposed to be Nipsey. Nipsey was the lone gang member who got killed. And they were like, well, you know what? That's a parole violation. You see how dirty that is? And y'all think we ain't supposed to question this? Y'all think we're not supposed to question some scandalous garbage like that? Yeah, and he's in a wheelchair. The dude, he's paralyzed from the leg down, from what I understand. The dude's in a wheelchair. So let's be straight. Remember, the getaway driver of the murder of Nipsey got questioned and let go initially. But the victim of the shooting and the witness, the victim and the witness, he gets charged for being around a known gang member, and the gang member got killed too. And that's Nipsey. So they got this guy and arrested him. And he's back in custody now. And we're not supposed to question these filthy demonic race soldiers. And you know what this is about. So they got him. And you know what they're going to do to him? Because when they get you on such a weak charge like that, which it's basically I'm white and I say so. And another thing, if Nipsey was an active gangbanger, which he's not, Nipsey's not an active gangbanger. He wasn't an active gangbanger. Because Nipsey, remember, they were putting out reports that Nipsey was supposed to meet up with the police to talk about quelling gang violence. Remember that? So I'm trying to see which angle the police are trying to go with. If you're going to work with Nipsey to stop gang violence, but then you arrest somebody who was around him because Nipsey's a gang member, then what does that say about you, police? We got to ask questions. That's trash. These people are running the game on us. Anybody who's trying to tell you this is normal, these are people who are agents themselves. So what they going to do sound like what they're going to do to the brother who got arrested. They going to get to him and be like, look, you want to go back to jail because you know you weren't supposed to be around a gang member, even being around that store. Now, you can either go back to jail for another 20 years or you can say, hey, Eric Holder had a crazy look in his eye when he shot you. Isn't that what you saw? Didn't he look like he was kind of insane? All right? Didn't he look like he was kind of out of his mind when he shot you? Did he look like himself? Did he look like he might have been drugged up or any kind of medicine or something when he shot you? Well, that's what we need you to say in court. Yeah, we need you to say that he looked crazy when he shot you. You see what I'm saying? You think they ain't having that conversation with him? Because this was one of the few witnesses. Not only was he a victim, he's one of the few witnesses. And the victim and the witness gets arrested? And y'all think this ain't no damn conspiracy? Please. On that bogus charge? Come on, man. They about to go in here and start going over what to say and what not to say. These people are not to be trusted. And again, I showed some stuff on my Instagram of the Eric Holder guy when he was in the holding part of the courtroom when Chris Darden was representing him. If you look at the video, Chris Darden kept walking in front of him. And the media was like, the news reporter said, well, Chris Darden was trying to block the cameras from seeing him. I'm like, that's very interesting. And I looked in the back, there's a gang of cops surrounding this guy, this Eric Holder guy. A gang of cops surrounding him. I've never seen anybody get that type of protection, especially a black person. I've never seen a black person get that type of protection. And looks like Christopher Darden had a bulletproof vest on, too, under his suit. His suit looked real bulky. So I'm like, they're really protecting this damn dude. They are really, really, really protecting this dude. I mean, they're going out of their way to protect this dude. I swear, look at the video of Chris Darden. Chris Darden is deliberately walking in front of the guy. People kept, they were making it seem like he was trying to block the cameras. No. Looked like he had a vest on, so if anybody shot, it'd hit Chris's vest or something. I mean, this thing stinks to high heaven, man. Also, how come you haven't seen Eric Holder's new mugshot? We haven't seen no new mugshot of this guy. I've never seen this type of protection for a black person who committed a murder, or any black person. I've never seen this level of protection before. So they're protecting this Eric Holder guy because they figure if this guy gets hurt in any way, he's going to start talking. So they're going to have to kill him in jail. And that's really going to look funny style. So they're protecting this dude at all costs because if he gets hurt in any kind of way, he might just say, hey, I'm about to tell. And start dropping names on all of his connections as an informant. You can't find no information. They're hiding a lot of his record. I've been hearing so much stuff on the streets. On the streets, I've heard the dude did like 8 years for a murder. They let him out. Then he got caught with another gun charge. I mean, I'm hearing this from credible sources. And the media, they're not putting a lot of this information out on this guy. We better ask questions. And we better understand what we're dealing with. That's what our brother meant by having strong enemies. We got some very strong enemies out here. We shouldn't be afraid of them. We should not be afraid of these strong enemies. But again, RIP to our brother, Nipsey. I mean, the impact that this brother had on the city, man, so many people in the city. No, there has never been an independent artist that has had this much of a global impact. Think about this. No independent artist has had this type of global impact. And I saw some people initially, they were making comparisons to Jesus with Nipsey. And it's, at first it seemed kind of, okay, these, you know, people are extra. But when you look at certain things, I'm like, well, certain things are starting to click a little bit. Jesus died at 33. Nipsey died at 33. Jesus had a saintly mother. Nipsey's mother is very saintly. I remember seeing her talk at the funeral, had a very saintly vibe. Jesus was done in by Judas, somebody who was supposed to be on his team. Nipsey was done in by a Judas, somebody who was in the same set. There's a lot of comparisons. When you start breaking stuff down, you see a lot of comparisons. Jesus was a man of the people. Nipsey was a man of the people. Yeah. A lot of comparison. No, I'm not saying he's, but there's a lot of comparison. Jesus, many people say that he actually originated out of Ethiopia. In Ethiopia, in that area, Ethiopia, Eritrea, those were, that area was one of the first, one of the oldest Christian areas. They practiced Christianity for a long time over there in that East Africa area, and that's where his folks, his dad came from. I don't get too much into the numbers thing, but I thought that was very interesting. I thought that was very, very interesting. Somebody said Jesus had a beard. But, you know, everybody, Jesus touched a lot of people on the grassroots level. He broke bread, helped people out. Nipsey was that dude. Look at the outpouring of love that so many people have of this guy. You know, look at the way he has impacted people on the grassroots level, people on the streets. Jesus unified people. Nipsey unified people. Unified a whole city. Jesus had demonic spirits coming after him. Nipsey had the white supremacists coming after him. He had strong enemies. You understand? Somebody said Jesus was tall and lanky. But man, good dude. Good solid dude. And, you know, I've been posting up a lot of tweets he made and social media posts where he has given me props. I mean, the brother showed me. That's why it hits me hard, because the brother showed me nothing but respect and love personally and privately. And publicly and privately, I'm sorry. You know, so that's why I'm always going to question some of the things surrounding this whole case. Even if I have to put the tinfoil koofy on, I'm going to put that tinfoil koofy on, because too many things just don't make sense when you start looking at it from the from fresh eyes. But I digress, ladies and gentlemen. Now, another thing we got to start looking into again. Now, we got to get back on our tip about getting these reparations. That's another thing, too. Because, you know, this thing is kind of taking a lot of focus off that, the whole case. But now we got to get back on that, because, again, we got to get back to what we need to be talking about. Because the enemy, they don't sleep. Our strong enemies, they're going out of their way to deny us what we're owed. I know Corey Booty, he's talking about putting together some type of reparations thing where he's going to present to Congress. That's another trick bag already. Corey Booty, he's going to be up here talking about he wants to put a commission together to study reparations and to research. Y'all got to watch the words. You got to watch the words. Corey and all these guys are already using trick bag and deceptive words. So as much as they try, they can try as much as they want to. We're still not going to bite when they're throwing these non-tangibles our way. We don't want to hear nothing about them studying nothing or researching anything. It's tangible time. I don't want to hear nothing about nothing except when are those tangibles coming through? When is the checks coming? When are the checks coming? That's all I want to know. And we got to stop being afraid to let folks know where we stand. Black folks, fear time is over. We've been scared too long, and that's something that we can learn from our brother Nipsey. We got to learn how to be bold, how to be fearless, how to get stuff done, how to have purpose in your life. We got to understand we got to live in our purpose because life is short. And fortunately, our brother Nipsey got a lot of stuff done at a young age. That's why he's so revered. That's why so many people love him. This brother did so much and he was so impactful at a young age. That's something that we should learn from. See, we got to learn success. We got to learn success, family. We got to learn the science of success. Success is walking into your purpose, living your purpose. And I talk about this all the time, family. What's your purpose? You don't want to just live for nothing. You got to have a purpose. You got to find your purpose. And you find your purpose by trying different things and constantly learning. That's why our brother Neely Fuller says, whenever somebody says, how are you, Neely? He says, I'm still learning. You always got to be in learning mode. That's what Nipsey was about. Again, at the funeral, everybody was talking about how much he wanted to learn new stuff. He was always learning, 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 reading, 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 watching films, watching my films, giving props to my films, learning. That's the name of the game, family. You better always be in learn mode. The problem is we've been taught to be in hater mode. Too many of us are in hater mode. When you're in hater mode, you're not learning anything. See, we've been around the white supremacists, so we learn some of their hateful-ass ways. So what we do is, just like the white supremacists, we try to be like them by hating on a black person who's successful instead of learning some game from them. That hating thing, that's something from the damn white supremacists. Because they hate on us, especially when we're successful. It's especially when we're successful without them, they hate. So then we try to be like them by hating on another successful black person when we need to be gobbling up game. When I see somebody black and successful, I've always been this way. I want to know how this brother's getting it. I want to get some game from that person. I want to get some game and learn what that brother or sister is doing. See, there's two ways to get success. You study other people who are successful and emulate them, or you study yourself and your mistakes and you learn from every mistake that you make, and then you logically conclude how to not fall for the same mistakes again and go another route that's going to bring you success. And a lot of people, they're too prideful to do either one. You don't want to learn no game from nobody else because he think he better than everybody. And you don't want to learn from your own damn mistakes. You keep messing up, doing the same nonsense over and over again, and you're not getting any kind of results, and you're not learning from that. You think the whole world is stupid except you. You have to learn game from yourself. And when you make mistakes, you better learn from those mistakes, from those missteps. But you study folks. And when you learn a little something, and this is another thing, when you learn something that you get success from, no matter who you learn it from, you can learn game from anybody. Because, you know, I'm hell on the white supremacists. I don't like white supremacists at all. But let me tell you something. When I'm around white supremacists, I'm all ears. I study a lot of game from the white supremacists because I learn what they do right. Because see, the white supremacists, in order for them, they are successful people in a demonic way. But one thing they do, they hoard information. They get information and do not give you access to it. See, they don't give black folks access to certain information. there's a lot of stuff they keep away from us that they share with each other. See, this is why back during the Jim Crow era, some of the most successful black people were those train porters. Train porters and barbers. Those were some of the most successful black people in black America. Train porters and barbers. Why? Because a lot of barbers had white clientele and they would soak up game from them white people who they would cut their hair. And the train porters, they would be in those trains, you know, busing the trains and waiting tables and all this, and they would be learning game. They would be ear hustling, listening to these white people talk about stocks, bonds, real estate, all types of stuff, and soaking up game from them. You dig? It's like Elijah Muhammad, somebody in the chat room said it. He said, study the white man and all his affairs. You better study these white supremacists. See, the thing is, black folks get around white folks and you're thinking, okay, how can I get a white woman? Y'all be thinking in terms of sexuality. Black folks get around white people and the brothers are like, how can I get with Becky? And some of the ladies, y'all be out here trying to figure out how to be a better bed wench. Yeah? When you get around these folks, you better look around and see what they're doing successful and how they did it and try to get some game up out of them as much as you can. They'll only tell you so much. They will only tell you so much. And the thing is, when you learn some game, you share that game with somebody else and help them elevate. You find another black person, and that's another thing. When you share game with other people and you elevate them, that brings you more success. We're not supposed to be like the white supremacists hoarding the game and we're just trying to be the big Negro on the plantation. You share that game. You find somebody who's worthy of that game and you lift them up with that. You dig? Like I said, when you teach others success, that brings you more success. And the problem is a lot of folks don't want to learn the game of success. See, what they want to do, they want to take a shortcut. They want to start taking shortcuts instead of learning some game from somebody. You see somebody shine and you see another black person with something fly or something that you don't have. Instead of chopping it up with that person to see how he acquired that, what game did he have to acquire that? You're like, well, hell, I can go get a gun and just take his. Or I can just take his life and then neither one of us will have nothing. And that'll make me feel better because then we'll both be on the bottom. Or at least I'll be on top of him because he's dead and I'm alive. You know, that's Dusty Eric Holder type thinking. I cut this deal with the police and off him. He dead, I'm alive, so now I'm doing better than him. That's how desperate and devious the hate becomes. Instead of sitting down with a cat and learning some game from him. That's the thing. You can't take no shortcut, because even if you take a shortcut like that, you're going to get yourself in the hole. So now you ain't living in no purpose. Taking something from somebody else by force, that's more to do with hate and self-envy and self-deprecation. That's not how you get down. Yeah, we got too many smash and grab, get rich quick scheme type of cats out here who don't want to learn no game. And a lot of these dudes get that from being raised by single mothers, because the single mother, or just women in general, they could take a shortcut when it comes to a man. All you got to do, if you're a woman, you're cute enough, you fly enough, your mouthpiece is tight enough, and you're loyal enough to a dude, they'll raise you up. You can come up. And this is women of all races. With women of all races, women, you could just be decent looking enough and you catch the right dude and you don't have to go to college and all this old stuff. You can just be cute with a nice little mouthpiece and catch the right cat who's holding the bag. Then you can come up. Women can do that. Look at the dude who owns Amazon. This dude just had to pay his ex-wife $34 billion in a divorce settlement. Do you feel this woman who didn't, I don't know if she went to school or not, but this woman got $34 billion for just chilling. She didn't have to work hard for that. Bezos, that's his name, right? $34 billion for catching the right dude. The right dude thought she was cute. And she's sitting on $34 billion. Now, in the hood, the version of that is just go get knocked up by some baller. And then you can live pretty decently. So that's how, if that's your get down, that's what it is. If you're cute enough and you can do that, then get it how you live. If you're cute enough, you can do that, get it how you live. See, dudes can't do that. See, a lot of dudes see women take these little shortcuts, and they can't take those shortcuts. As men, you're supposed to learn some game. Ain't no shortcut to that. As a man, your life's mission is supposed to learn game so that you can take on a leadership role, at least with your family. At least with your family, so you can take on a leadership role. A lot of these dudes, again, they're so used to being around these women. They were raised by single mothers, single grandmothers, a bunch of sisters. So you see them taking shortcuts, getting things from dudes, and you can't do nothing as a man to get some from another dude. You can go up to Ed Buck's house, but we see how that might turn out. You can go up here and dangle your bussy around white men, but that ain't gonna really pan out too good for you in the long run, because you end up with all of these diseases from them. That's where you're getting all the damn diseases from, these zaddies out here. So a lot of that don't really pan out the way you need it to pan out. So if you want to do it on a street level, you see another brother shine, and so you're going to try to get what he has by force. That don't work for you. Ain't no shortcuts for no dudes. You try to be a stick-up kid and try to be on some get-rich-quick by hitting the next brother, that don't work out for you. Other groups don't let you hit them like that. That's why when you walk into an Asian store, they're already looking at you like, hurry up and buy. And they got one finger on the trigger, one hand on the cash register. So nobody trusts you over on that side of town. The Arabs, they talking to you through a bulletproof glass, so they ain't gonna let you get them. White folks, you can't even go in their neighborhoods without them popping you. So the only other victim you have is another person who looks like you that you're going to try to come up with on the quick. And then that turns out funky, because you do something to that brother, then you get knocked and you're going to get locked down forever. So understand, ain't no shortcuts for dudes. Learning game is mandatory. You're going to have to learn you some game. You're going to have to step your mouthpiece up. You're going to have to put the weed pipe down for a second. Everything ain't partying and BSing. Just like with Nipsey. Nipsey was on my show on Ism, and we talked about that. We talked about weed, and Nipsey said something very interesting. We were talking about weed when Lauren London was there, and he was saying that, you know, he kind of chills out on smoking when he's trying to handle some real thorough business. Because he wants his mind to be clear. And he knows when he starts smoking, his mind ain't where it needs to be. But when it comes to business, he knows how to kind of step away from that. I really want y'all to listen to that episode of Ism when Nipsey was on there. He was spitting some real hot fire. Many people say that's the best interview they've heard of Nipsey, because we're talking real game. We ain't talking just about the music. We're talking about life. We're talking about money. We're talking about business. So it's a very good episode if you have not listened to it. But again, we gotta put that weed pipe down. We gotta start handling business, because we've been taught we don't have to look at things to be successful in. Everything is about partying and having fun. That's what we've been taught. We've been taught that every day should be a party. Life is hard. Let's just party. The problem is, that's all we're doing is partying. And this is why these purge parties, because that's what it is. These are purge parties. This is why our partying always ends up turning deadly. Because the partying is just a cover to camouflage and mask the pain of being subjected to a system of white supremacy. And partying creates a facade. Partying all the time. You understand? We can't party all the time. See, we have to learn how to store food during the summer, so to speak. We have to learn how to store food during the summer. And that saying comes from the grasshopper. Is it the grasshopper and the ant? Yeah, the grasshopper and the ant story. I always tell a story about the grasshopper and the ant. During the summer, there was an ant and a grasshopper, and the grasshopper was chilling, sitting on his ass, parlaying, partying while the ant was working. The ant was storing food. The ant was getting his food game in order. And the grasshopper kept telling the ant, man, you need to turn up. You need to get this thing popping. It's summer. Let's get it popping. No, the ant was like, I got work to do. No, the grasshopper is hot. It's nice. Come on, man. Let's get it popping. The ant was like, no, I'm working. So the ant working all summer storing up food. And then when winter came, the grasshopper had done all that partying. Now he's cold. He's chilly. He's hungry. And the ant is sitting up here chilling, parlaying, living good. And the ant was like, I told you. And that's one of my favorite stories. Because you got to think like that. You have to gather that food in the summer. And that means when it's time to party, when it's time to kick it, have a good time, you need to be preparing. You need to be getting ready for those cold days. This is why I remember writing my book, The Art of Mackin', my first bestseller. Now, I wrote this book during the summer. That's why that grasshopper and ant story hits me so hard, because I wrote that book during the summer. At the time, I'm very young. I was very young when I wrote that book. I was in my mid-20s when I wrote that book. So I'm clubbing, partying. I'm out there in the game having a good old time. But I knew I had to write the book because I knew this book would be a classic. I just had to discipline myself enough to write it. So I sat myself down and I said, I'm not going to leave the house. I'm not going to club. I'm not going to party. For the next 4 to 6 months, I'm just going to sit here and write this damn book. And I'm writing this book, sitting in the crib. So many people trying to get me to go out. The ladies calling, trying to hook up. And that's another thing. It's one thing to sequester your crib, sequester yourself in the crib when you don't have a choice. But when you have a choice not to, that's different. See, there's some people who are just socially awkward. There's a lot of people who are extremely socially awkward, so they ain't got no choice but to be in the crib. That's why a lot of socially awkward people, they come across as geniuses, because they're in the house writing and working and creating certain things. Usually that's because they're just socially awkward and they don't have a choice but to use their energy in a certain way, which is nothing wrong with that. I'm not knocking any of my introverted people. I'm not knocking you, not knocking you at all. But it's one thing to be that and then be a person who is socially comfortable to introvert yourself, to make that self-imposed. That's where the discipline comes in. Because a lot of us do things, we do what we have options to do. So if you got the option to go out here and turn up with the ladies, you got option to hit the club up and have a good time and party with the breezies, a lot of cats will just take that option. It's a lot of discipline to say, hey, I'm not going to do that for right now. When I'm done with this damn book, I'm going to get it popping, popping. But for right now, I'm going to make sure I got myself together and do this. And that's what I did when I did The Art of Mackin'. I forced myself into exile. Didn't go out at all for like 4 or 5 months. And the thing is, that book, when I finished the book, put it out, hugely successful book. I still make money off that damn book today. It's 20 years. I wrote that book 20 years ago. And that book is still a bestseller to this day. I get thousands of dollars a month on that one book. If I got me a little apartment somewhere in Texas somewhere, I know the rent ain't that high, I can just live off that book if I wanted to. I can just get me a little apartment and just chill off that book alone. that I wrote 20 years ago. See, we got to have that kind of discipline. And see, our brother Nipsey had that kind of discipline. Nipsey wasn't just a rapper. This brother was a businessman. This is a young dude coming up with the Vector 90 business and talking about STEM and buying up whole mall areas. This is a young dude. Nipsey was 33 years old, and this brother's been doing this stuff since he was in his 20s. You understand? That takes discipline to do that. It takes discipline and focus to do that. And that's what you do as a man. Men, we're supposed to be disciplined and focused. That's called manhood. My brother Nipsey was showing folks how manhood was supposed to get down. You're supposed to be doing stuff like that. So when we honor Nipsey, don't just honor him by going out there lighting up a candle. Do what he was doing. Keep that legacy going. Focus like he was focusing. Keep the businesses popping. Keep reading. Keep educating yourself. Put the weed down every now and then. Nipsey said he put the weed down every now and then. My man was constantly educating himself. He was constantly reading, constantly learning. He wasn't like, man, Tariq Neal making them documentaries. He wasn't on that dumbass nonsense. And that's another thing. We got to stay away from these haters. Even my man Nipsey said that. Some of these goofy dudes, he said, put them in the goofy corner. You dig? That's just manhood. Ain't no shortcuts to manhood. You got to live. A lot of cats, y'all want to play it safe. Man, life is about adventure. You can't play it safe because the enemies are coming to you. Ain't no playing it safe. A lot of dudes think, okay, I'm just going to kick it in my baby mama house or my mama's house and I'm going to be safe forever. Ain't no safe places for black men. They can come in your house and get you. So it's best to go out here, learn the world, become international people, get out here and get all the game you can get so we can better combat these strong enemies called white supremacists. That's where we got to be. We got to stop being afraid. Stop being afraid to die. That's another thing. Like my man James Small says, you don't die. Especially when you live your life, when you live a full life, when you live a life of purpose, you don't die. Nipsey, the flesh ain't here, but Nipsey's spirit is everywhere. Why is that man's spirit all over this city? There's murals all over the city of Nipsey. This brother, his homecoming shut this whole city down. There's been vigils all around the world for Nipsey. That man is alive. That man's spirit is alive because he lived. He lived with a purpose. When you live with a purpose, you don't die. People try to take you out. That just makes your spirit stronger. That makes your presence stronger. That's why Malcolm X, his spirit didn't die. He's still here. The game Malcolm X gave is still here. They took the vessel, the body, but he's still here because he lived in a purpose. When you live with purpose, you don't go nowhere. Dr. King lived with a purpose. His spirit is here. You know whose spirit dies? Coons. Coon spirits die. Notice, we don't remember coons. You can't name coons from 40, 50, 60 years ago. You can't name one coon. Coons come and go. Coons and haters, nobody remembers them. That's why being a coon and a hater is the worst thing you can be because you live for nothing. Your purpose in life is not to be a damn coon and hater. Who's going to remember Roland when he's gone? Who's going to remember Candace Owens when she's gone? And what's going on with Candace Owens and her hair? Did y'all see Candace Owens the other day? When she was at that hearing about the white supremacist groups and all that, and she was up there with that busted kitty perm. Candace Owens used to look kind of decent. Now she looks all haggard. I don't know what the white supremacists are doing to her. She had that hairstyle that chicks who's gone full bed wench, they just can't be around no black people. Clearly, she's not been around any black people at all. she can't go to nobody who can do her hair right because she don't like black folks. So she's been trying to go to Fantastic Sam's to get her hair done. And the white women don't know how to use a flat iron. Her hair was looking crazy. That was the thing that was throwing me off, that woman's hair. This woman looked like she put a Just For Me perm in her hair and didn't neutralize it. Like, what type of white people are you around? They've been washing her hair with Garnier Fructis products. Clearly, she has not been around any black people. My God. Oh, yeah, she went to them white salons, supercuts, when the white women be having aluminum foil in their hair. What do they be putting in white women be having that aluminum foil in their hair? What the hell is that? My God. She got her hair done by the white girl who had a black roommate in college. I had a black roommate. I once used a hot comb on my roommate, so I know a little bit about black hair. She had her hair done by one of them white women. And let them white women tear her damn edges up, split ass ends to be damned. Lord. Boy, that woman's hair was frizzy as hell. Them ends were toe up. And the white woman who did it probably thought she did something. Wow, look at you. People are going to think you're Beyonce when they see this. Oh, God. Why'd you let that white woman do your hair like that, Candace? Clearly a white woman did your hair. Lord. I had never seen something that outdated. And white women, they be doing all types of outdated hairstyles on sisters. Because, again, the last time they did somebody, they did one black person's hair when they were in college. So they did one black person's hair. One. Like, look, I'm going to do your hair. You're going to look just like Jody Watley. Like, who? You're going to look like CeCe Peniston when I'm done with you, girl. Girlfriend. Oh, God. Let the white woman tear your damn hair up like that. Man. But anyway, yeah. Anyway, y'all. Let me get up out of here. Look, don't forget to go to buckbreakingmovie.com. Family, we're at the halfway mark. We need the family to get down with this film. If you contributed, family, contribute again. If you have not, contribute today. Be a part of the production for the new movie, Buck Breaking. Go to buckbreakingmovie.com or click the link below. Buck Breaking on Kickstarter. We're almost there. We're only trying to get 75K. We can get that. We can get that, family. And also, family, get that, the Ogun shirts and sweaters. We got different colors, bigger sizes. Get that at TariqElite.com, ladies and gentlemen. All right, I am up out of here, family. Y'all have a good weekend. I will talk to you guys Sunday.